bello, vampe, 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 ribalta di forti, vampe, 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 ribalta di forti, vampe, vampe, vampe. Laggiù, dietro quel fiume, Sugri Pascià comunica telefonicamente con 27 forti in turco e tedesco. Allo Ibrahim Rudolph, allo, allo, attori ruoli.
You're listening to WGXC, Wave Farm Radio 90.7 FM. This is Tongue and Cheek, Resonators with Zach Winneker, broadcasting live from Montez Press Radio 46 Canal. WGXC is amidst its Tower of Babel pledge drive till March 6th, 2020. The Tower of Babel is a biblical myth about turning one voice or one language into many. That's what Wave Farm's WGXC radio signal does. We recently renewed the tower site lease where our FM transmitter and antenna reside. As a part of the Tower of Babel pledge drive, WGXC, we are working to build its base of monthly sustaining donors to support WGXC's place on the Tower of FM radio antennas. To become a sustaining supporter or to make a one-time donation, go to wgxc.org/donate or call 518-697-7400.
Immenso orchestra di guerra, gonfiarsi sotto una nota di silenzio tenuta nell'alto cielo, pallone sferico dorato, sorvegliare i tiri.
We're joined today by Zach Winneker, who's going to start us off with a few physical exercises before we give him a proper introduction.
Indeed.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm really happy to be here. So we're talking about resonating today. So I thought we could start with an exercise that just frees up our body, because tension is the opposite of resonance. And so let's find movement everywhere.
So we'll be drifting around the mics a bit. You want to be over there?
Yeah.
Go over there.
So take a sort of wide stance. Easy knees and easy hips. And really feeling your feet on the floor. You can just shift your weight a little bit between the surfaces of your feet. And start to check in with your breathing. And just notice where your breathing goes, where it stops. Does it reach your knees? Does it go into the back of your neck? Is it in your mouth, in your nose? How does it activate your face? And then take one hand and put it on the front of your pubis and one hand on your tailbone. And so between your hands is what we're going to call the visceral sphere. And I'd like you to just breathe between your hands. Breathe into the visceral sphere. So once you feel the energy between your hands in that breath, start to move the rest of your body around that solid sphere.
Can we switch hands?
Absolutely.
And we're still keeping our feet in place.
Feet in place. And now we're just going to find your hip crease and hinge over
on bent knees.
And here, so we're hanging upside down. We've got feet firmly planted. The visceral sphere is squeezed a bit, but still trying to breathe into that space. And then just put both hands on your lower back and just try to breathe into your hands there. Making sure the top of your head is really hanging absolutely down.
And again, where are our hands?
Just at the top of the pelvis on your back, very, very low lumbar. And then moving your hands to your middle back so the heel of your hand can just rest underneath your ribs. And again, trying to breathe into your palms.
Breath through the nose.
Whatever works. You can make sound here. And then moving your hands even higher so they're really placed on your rib cage, on the back of your ribs, and breathing into your hands there. One more breath. And then slowly rolling up. And keeping the breath in your back. So wanting to really feel the space behind you, the activation of your rib cage, the like 360 degree breath. And you can just start to find movement, like little circles in your joints, in your wrists, in your shoulders. You can unroot your feet and start to circle them. And just starting to find waves through your spine. Focusing still on your breath. And really, again, returning your hands to that visceral sphere, one hand on your pubis, one hand on your tailbone, and really trying to find the wave beginning there. And then I just want you to feel like we drop into water and float. So you're feeling the air like waves that move your body just like seaweed.
And with one hand floating, draw your arm towards your mouth and let your fingers dangle just in front of your lips.
Anemone.
See it as a little floating piece of company. And with one breath in, on a breath out, let out a tss. And another breath in for another one. Watching where your hand goes. One more, drawing this out like a string, a thread from your lips. And with that string, imagine a hook on your ceiling. Throw the string over the hook and catch it with the other hand, so that your two hands are attached by this thread, as if there was a little pulley on the ceiling. When one arm goes down, the other goes up. When the other arm goes down or forward, the other one goes back. With another coming out from your lips, you're going to throw another string down to your foot, your left foot. So breathe in and let out with an F sound. Keeping your two arms rocking on this pivot of the ceiling. You're throwing that other string up with your left foot over the hook, kicking up. As it comes down, you catch it with your right foot, so that all of your limbs are rocking on the same pivot.
And the floor is a hull.
We're going to go cut the strings. Letting your arms fall down. Since we've been working in the lateral plane, let's change it up a little bit. So we're going to put our arms in front of our shoulders and imagine that someone is pulling your hands away from your body.
Straight out in front of you.
Straight out in front of you. You can drop your head between your arms and really, like, a lot of effort. And then let it go and release the opposite way, where your shoulder blades contact each other in the back. You open your heart and arch. And repeating this again, so arms outstretched in front of you, being pulled away from your body. Letting that go, contacting your shoulder blades behind you together, opening up your heart. And then finding a neutral again. A couple just stamps on the floor to find your feet again. And finding standing, neutral standing. Take a second to just check in with your breath. Even though you're standing, all of that movement is still small but frequent inside of you. And just place your right hand on the top of your head and just push away. push your head into your hand into your head. Really trying to root your feet into the floor and drive your head through your hand into the sky. And then just let that go and see where your body naturally falls. And one more time, left hand this time to the top of the head, and push away. Finding a clear channel between the floor and the sky. This time, keep pushing away, but gently remove your hand from the top of your head and bring it down to your side. I'm going to move over to Timmy.
Yes.
So keeping this posture with your head reaching up into the sky and your feet rooting to the floor, I'm going to place two fingers on the back of your head exactly in line with your eyes. These are your back eyes. And I want you to see out of your back eyes.
Timmy's gaze is changing.
I'm now going to put my finger right in line with the tip of your nose on the back of your head. This is your back nose. Smell out of your back nose. Now I'm going to place my fingers in line with your mouth on the back of your neck. This is your back mouth. I want you to first taste out of your back mouth. Move your back tongue around your back teeth. And now open your back mouth and start to vocalize. So you have to use your throat, which is in the middle, but direct it through your back mouth.
Might be open to debate.
Open your mouth. And now move the sound forward. So now try moving the sound forward like you would normally, but keeping your back mouth open. There is a moment there. Try one more time.
Feels like a small eddy in the middle of my head.
A heady?
A heady that doesn't know which way it's going, but it's sort of like lost in between.
But like liquid, it takes up all the space and it reached across the table.
Can we do it
like
again?
A double.
Also, just
double
interesting
field.
How much your posture changed.
Mm. Especially, I felt it with actually opening my back mouth first. And also...
you mean thinking that your back mouth opens before you make
before
any sound?
Before I even projected anything, yeah.
Yeah.
Were you visualizing these back appendages? How were you conjuring
yeah,
them?
Yeah, it just... It just made sense, if you can feel it. I mean, especially the eyes also just makes you sort of lose focus in the front and you yeah. don't think about what's periphery or not. Mm.
I've always had this feeling about the eyes that we imagine them and feel them a lot more further front from where they actually are
mm-hmm.
because they're orbs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about the axis of that orb,
mm-hmm.
it sort of helps bring your head back on your spine, actually,
mm.
to think that they drop through your cheeks, like inside, rather mm-hmm. than in the front,
mm-hmm.
which sort of softens the focus and allows for the space to happen in the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most of what we see is peripheral anyway, the field of peripheral vision.
Is that true?
Yes. Yes.
Well, there's only one point that's in the middle.
True.
Yeah, I like that. Maybe we can just do something with that, with the axis of our eyeballs.
Hmm.
Yeah? As a way of finding a new middle to our head in some ways.
Hmm.
How do we do this? Close your eyes and place your fingers just very gently on your eyelids and start to swirl your eyes around a little bit so that you can feel on your fingertips the unevenness of those things we call balls. For me, it's particularly uneven because I have contact lenses.
But you can also feel like the curve underneath the ridge of the eyebrow,
mm-hmm.
like almost like you can almost spoon them out.
Mm-hmm.
It's very tense in there for me,
mm-hmm.
actually.
Let's do the same thing that you said actually earlier with pressing your hand on top of your head. Imagine you can push your eyeball against your finger. And with equal pressure, pushing your finger against your eyeball through the soft of your eyelid. And then removing your fingers but keeping your lids closed. Imagine that pressure forward and how it's deforming your closed lids. Now shift your fingers to where Zach had put my back eyes, to the back of your head with your eyes closed, bringing two fingers to the back of your head where you imagine your back eyeballs would be, finding them. And now putting equal pressure on the back of your head and your back eyeballs on your two fingers on the back of your head. Through that equally soft bit of skin, maybe covered in hair, that are your back eyelids. And with your back eyeballs closed, track your fingers as they move around the side of your head, as if you were going wall-eyed, tracing your fingers as they pass your ears, as they round your brow, as they come back to your front, until your fingers rest again on your front eyelids. And you press again forward against them. And slowly open your eyes, releasing your fingers. As your arms come down and your eyes are open, feel how the blood is running through your fingers, down the sides of your hand, maybe into your thumbs, under your fingernails, as your arms drop. And find some vowel or some sound that feels like it sits in the warmth of your hands as they seem to be filled with blood. And give that vowel voice on one out breath. Okay. Let's shake a little bit, and maybe we can go into something a little bit more with the weight of our forearms and sort of some ruddering, or do we want to go into more resonance stuff first?
Let's go for weight.
Weight first?
Okay. Yeah. So you can just sort of bounce your shoulders up and down and really try to really let them drop, like the speed of gravity. Nothing holding them.
Should you feel a little shock, like
I
do in here?
There's a little
ricochet.
There's
a resonance.
And there's a bone feeling, right?
There's a bone feeling, but it feels like a tingle in my fingers. Maybe I have bad circulation.
And then just continue to let the hands sort of shake without without the shoulders. So the shoulders are just dropped. And I'm gonna go over to Emma this time. And I'm going to stand behind Emma. And so just let your arms come to a resting place. Just really heavy, really easy. And I'm going to hold in my palms Emma's forearms. And I'm going to ask you, Emma, to let go all the way into my hands, to let me hold them and nothing else. And so I'm going to bounce them, and I'm going to shake them, and I'm going to feel the joints of your elbow and the heavy flop of your wrists. And I want you to just let go. So think heavy. Almost think like you're pressing into me, but just let it be heavy. And I'm just going to bounce. And this is just to find the weight of the forearms, which is, I think, very difficult, actually. There's a lot else to hold them up. And now I'm just going to ask you to keep that heaviness and just do it without me now. Just allow your forearms to be heavy and to move from your elbows.
They feel leaden.
And now...
Rudder?
Rudder.
Do you want me to jump in?
Yeah, do you want to do it with me?
Sure, let's try. So, same thing, Zach, that you just told Emma. Start by just maybe shaking a little bit. I'll come over to you. And again, trying to find the weight as our headphones clank against each other. And continuing on your own. Keep going with each. Should feel no different when I grab hold again. And I'm just going to place, as Zach continues, one hand on the elbow of one of his arms, my palm finding the round of his palm. And I'm going to sort of give a motion to have him sort of stir a little soup first with this weightless arm, maybe stirring some batter before it gets stiff, or some cucumber soup, super, super thin, no viscosity there. And then I'm going
whipping
to take
the aquafaba.
And then I'm going to take his hand away from the soup, keeping my palm on his elbow, extending it out, bringing it back, extending it out, riding his hand up, letting it drop. His whole body seems to be dropping. So, with this other person, let your whole body drop as if it was only held up by this one point in the palm of my hand in your elbow. So Zach is totally held up only by this one point in his elbow that rests in my palm, as if he's just tripped over someone and somebody has caught this elbow to support everything.
The elbow's looking like the pelvis.
The elbow is the pelvis. All your balance is in this one joint in my palm. And I'm going to now let go and allow Zach to still stand just with his newly located pelvis. How does that feel?
I feel like not quite in possession of it.
like it's your own puppet.
Like it's my own puppet. And the way that it affects the rest of my body feels so good. Like I kind of have to... It has infected the rest.
So try to find a way of shifting your elbow pelvis back to your own normal pelvis. See if you can. Maybe that means by sort of counterbalancing it by extending your other arm. Or recognizing that if one elbow is a pelvis, maybe the other one is too. And bringing it forward and down.
And the other thing I feel is that, like, through the ease, there's so much more range of motion.
Maybe we can step back for a bit and just talk a little bit why we might be doing some of this stuff. Why Emma and I invited Zach in the first place. And hear maybe a little bit from you, Zach, of how you think about these kinds of exercises, but movement in general in relationship to voice, because I think you have a very particular relationship to thinking about choreography and a musical voice, but voice in general. So maybe, you know, as a very late introduction, can you tell us, so Zach had studied at Juilliard, and where you started to work between, as a choreographer, but working between dance and with opera singers at the same time.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you could speak a little bit about your interest in bringing how you saw while you were studying those two things as separated, and at the same time what drove you to start to think about bringing them together in the ways that I think you have in your career since being at school and also at school.
Yeah, well, I think especially in the context of Juilliard, where the disciplines at that moment pedagogically were so separate, it really felt to me like dancers were bodies without voice, and that singers were voice without body. And that is a weird thing for anyone to be that incomplete, since obviously dancers possess a voice and singers possess a body. And most of the singers that I really admired who were not opera singers really were using both to tell a story or to, like, enhance the other. And for me, the interest in the operatic voice was partly just the physical phenomenon of it, like the kind of E equals MC squared, like, you couldn't believe that that volume was coming out of that mass. And I'd only, up to that point, experienced it at a distance. And
up until that point, as in before being in school?
Yeah, you know, where my contact with opera was when I would go to see it and be
far away.
Very far away from the people making the sound.
Right.
And in a way, it didn't actually impress me that much. Since I felt so out of contact. And especially since, you know, we hear things that are a lot louder all the time now. But being close really made me feel, like, viscerally attacked in a positive way, where I actually, you know, could feel my own body, every bone in my body, shaking with the force of these sound waves produced by this other body. And that felt like a kind of intimacy and a kind of thrill. And I wondered, you know, that's not something that we get through dancing. It's not transmitted. It's not penetrative in the same way. And I that really started to interest me. And I was also just curious about the way that singers kind of connected and possessed that inside of themselves and what it felt like, because it seemed so extraordinary that it was almost amazing to me that people who were
emitting
and resonating at that sort of level and magnitude could even walk or think at the same time. And so I sort of wanted to get kind of inside there a little bit more while staying very close to it as often as I could in a kind of daily way.
Do you remember any sort of early conversations with people that were in the opera program that you spoke to that spoke about their own bodily possession or dispossession?
Yeah, I mean, I remember some people talking about, like, getting into a certain space of head resonance where it really, what, like, made you kind of dizzy. And that was so crazy to me, as something that, you know, I've really never experienced. And so I remember them kind of talking about that and then talking about the way, you know, that you're able to kind of use different spaces inside of your body to produce different colors and different depths of sound. So, you know, that you could move the sound into the mask, like into the kind of nasal sinuses, and that it would possess this really pingy shooting sound, and that you could sort of imagine your back mouth and it could become much sort of deeper and richer and velvety. And then, of course, moving it, like, between the head and the mix and the chest, and that it felt like a kind of alchemy.
What kind of movement work or exercises were a part of the curriculum for singers at Juilliard?
Well,
was that lacking?
I thought so. I mean, obviously, it's really difficult when to sort of be in control of your body when you're working on that level of technical sort of thinking, and also the muscles involved are involuntary. So it means that you have to be imagining so much and using so much like visual imagination in order to make things happen, like raising your soft palate and, you know, finding more space in your head. And I felt like the curriculum that I was a part of with Stephen Wadsworth was about sort of like I sort of thought that when I met a lot of singers, they were busts, like they were really only kind of from the
waist up.
And it was about sort of dropping them into the rest of their body. Mm-hmm. It's like the history of sculpture. And so a lot of it was sort of making sure that people understood kind of like where their pelvis was and how their breathing worked and how that actually could engage their lower half and move them through space, and that it could be helpful instead of, you know, holding it scared that it would negatively impact your technique.
And some of those could be like image based things like we were doing.
Yeah, some of them are image based and some of them are just kind of like getting into the proprioceptive place of like remembering that you do have legs. And part of it is extremely practical. That's just like, you know, shake your hips and bend your knees and walk around while you're singing. And part of it was that you'd start to hear that when people loosened up their bodies and kind of started moving their pelvises around, that their support would be maintained and they would suddenly even
More.
Yeah, it was obvious but incredible.
And what about let's take a break from this in a second and do something with resonance. Can we, like, moving maybe from mask down?
Yeah.
And then come back into this, because there's a lot to talk about around it.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing just actually on that, as we're going to go down, that I remember from visiting Mary Birnbaum's class that taught or teaches besides Stephen Wadsworth, is that I always have this stuck in my head, that she described, this was for opera students in the advanced degree.
Yeah, the artist diploma program.
That she, one of the things that she had them do amidst, you know, a bunch of exercises that are maybe more involved with theater, of walking around the room and finding paces, when everybody paused, she said, imagine that you have on your back, but like your mid-back, a bunch of streamers, and you throw the streamers out from your back. And, you know, while everybody was doing that, she was saying, like, imagine all that space that you think you don't use when you're singing. And it just became this...
Trail de silage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And it's funny, I mean, I remember also, like, when I first walked by Placido Domingo on the street, and he was so deep. Like, his actual body was really deep. And I thought, oh, that makes a lot of sense, because it's kind of like pulling from behind to throw out. Like, there was like a lot more...
gladiatorial.
Yeah. And a lot of singers have that sort of barreled shape, which makes sense. Yeah. It's like, you know, the architecture of your body, the structure of your face, where your cheekbones are, how high they are, how, you know, those things actually absolutely change the way that you sing.
Right.
Like, your voice is your body.
Mm-hmm. Yet not just located in one way. Like, not just, you know, not all opera singers have a barrel chest, right?
Yeah.
I have a question about faciality and how that gets taught in an opera curriculum. The emphasis of the lips, you know, the look of the face.
Yeah.
Because in ballet, you know, there's a very specific way of coming...
That's such a good question. I mean, there are a lot of kind of, and these are things that I don't know so much about, but there's a lot of, you know, talking about, like, when you move sound more into the mask or, like, into your cheekbones, that you sometimes make faces that, like, sort of feel like the Giacometti, like, wedge sculptures. Yeah. That you sort of like move your face into a wedge shape. And sometimes it's about vowels and, you know, the words that you're saying and being able to you know, show your teeth so that your shape, the shape of your mouth holds in a certain way, so that, like, it, you know, it emphasizes and colors everything. And part of it, I think, you know, is also trying to look a little bit like a human while you're doing that,
right.
mm-hmm. which is really interesting. I mean, there are some singers who are so phenomenal who I love because they make absolutely the weirdest faces ever.
What about going in reverse, since you brought up ballet? So we spoke a little bit about your interest in opera singers from the perspective of having been a dancer and thinking about the movement of their bodies, but also how it comes and infects someone else's body. Maybe on that, what about for dancers? Like, what are some things that you do? Because you work as a choreographer, you work with a company also that you've started, AMOC, or AMOC, American Modern Opera Company. and I'm wondering if, you know, either together with AMOC or in other productions that you've been a part of, where there are dancers that, like you said, in reverse, are thought of as not having a voice, if you've worked with them, and maybe you can show us something, if something comes to mind, in giving them voice or showing their voice as a part of also their movement, in the same way that we think of movement as a part of, or that we might think of movement as a part of voice that seems so limited and stayed within certain kinds of opera.
And also possibly the effect of having spent the time in Wuppertal with Pina Bausch and her company.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the, sometimes, often I feel like it's kind of hidden but important. So, you know, like as a company and like AMOC is a group of singers, dancers, and instrumentalists, and we often do, you know, physical, we do warm-ups together as a company, and often that means all of the musicians and singers engaged in a kind of class taught by one of the dancers. Sometimes it's Gaga, you know, taught by Bobby Jean, who was with Ohad Naharin in Israel developing that technique. Sometimes it's gyrotonic. Sometimes it's just kind of improv and about contact and things like that. And similarly, we sometimes do like voice warm-ups. And it's just a very different way of engaging the body. And so we'll get, you know, one of the singers to kind of lead that. You know, and for me personally, like in the performances that I've done with singers, I usually try to engage with them as a singer as much as possible, even though I have a terrible voice and can't really do it. But it's partly to get into the timing of how they work and like the musculature and the phrasing, and to kind of get that at least as breath, if not sound, in my body so that we can sort of work off of each other.
It heats up the body from within.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just trying to think if there's a moment where we actually do, like in the work that we've made as a company, where any of the dancers are actually speaking or singing. And so far,
no,
I don't think so.
As a company.
Yeah.
But you've done other things before where they are.
Yeah, absolutely. But as a company, not yet.
So can you bring us through something that would be vocal focused?
Yeah, sure.
Or so, maybe that's the wrong thing to say after what we just said, but starting with voice.
Well, I just wanted to kind of try this out with you guys, but all of my singer friends have been using a straw to warm up. So we have with us, I think, like an organic recycled straw, I hope.
100% compostable.
And so what I'd like to do is ask you to put the straw in your mouth. And first what we're going to do is just kind of make a siren sound, starting either at the bottom or the top for yourself, and sing through the straw.
But thinking about singing or thinking about sirens? The back mouth?
For now, just try to make the sound.
Mm-hmm.
I feel so hot in my like really warmed up, no? And why don't we just try breathing first?
Yeah. So just focusing through our mouth, right? No nose.
Yes. So now just trying to make a note, one pitch, and trying to find the vibrating resonance in your face. Trying to go very high into your head voice. I feel so shook.
Oxygenated.
It's
yeah.
So much more. I feel like I engage my like support so much more instantaneously.
This also seems like there's less of a transition, like breathing in and out, much less of a transition between breathing in and out. Yeah. Somehow it feels more of a cycle.
Well, it's like you're, and it rations the breath.
Yeah. It's like your vocal tract is just longer because it's actually physically extended. Mm-hmm. I also find it easier to feel my face moving, shaking. Do you feel that?
Yeah.
Should we do a very low one?
Let's go very low. Why don't we start high and go low?
It's like a facial from inside the mouth.
So starting high. Recognizing where the vibration moves as you get lower and lower.
find that it's happening in my chest, and if I start to kind of bounce again from the pelvis as we had in the beginning, it sort of starts to shake down. So really rooting your feet and easing up your pelvis so it can be free to move as well. And I feel my visceral sphere super engaged and everything else around it buzzing.
Maybe we can put our hands again on our visceral sphere and spiel. Since we don't have to hold this draw, let's move back up and trace with your hands as your vibrations go back up. So starting low.
Trazzannarlo, smilzarlo, sparpagliarlo all'infinito. Nel centro di quei pom-pum, spiaccicati, ampiezza 50 km quadrati, balzare, scoppi, tagli, pugni, batteria tirata, violenza, feroce.